protest in the streets of Iran, all in the name of women's rights. I'm Skynell Hughes, and on this episode of 360 View, we're going to look at what is driving the protest and what effects outside countries are having. Let's get started. The death of an Iranian woman in police custody has now had a ripple effect, leading to more violence, threatening the crucial oil industry, and sparking protest across the globe. Our international correspondent, Roxana Solano, is here to tell us how it all started.
Scotty, this all began when an Iranian woman, Mahsa Amini, was arrested for improperly wearing a hijab. Just days after being taken into custody, she died. Her family says there were bruises all over her body, suggesting she had been beaten to death. However, police are claiming Amini died of a heart attack. This led to an eruption of protests throughout the country. Workers for Iran's oil and natural gas production began protesting over the death of the 22-year-old woman. The demonstrations mark the first time the unrest surrounding death of Mahsa Amini threatened the crucial industry. On September 24th, Iranian state television suggested at least 41 people had been killed in protests for Amini. However, Iran's government has not given an update. 40 days after her death, thousands were taking protesting at her gravesite. Celebrations on the 40th day of mourning has a cultural significance for Iranians. They began shouting, "Kurdistan will be the graveyard of fascists," and "Woman, life, freedom." Protesters there claim officers fired at least 5 rounds into the crowd dispensing tear gas. This led to an international movement, for example, protests in Germany, in France, many all over London, England, and on the streets of Toronto, Canada. And in the United States, during the Marine Corps Marathon in Washington, D.C., people began protesting the death and police reaction to Mahsa Amini's death. Now, there's a quote, "Turban game," going around Iran where school-aged children are taking videos of themselves running around, knocking turbans of men in the street as a way to protest Amini's death. One human rights group in Iran has estimated 185 people have been killed in Iran during the protest.
Joining us now for more on this is professor at the University of Tehran, Mohammad Mirandi. Welcome, Dr. Mirandi. You know, doctor, in your view, were the protests in Iran concerning the tragic death of a young woman entirely artificial, or do they hit on some discontent within Iranian society apart from Western attempts to stoke regime change?
First, we have to remember that the United States has been imposing maximum pressure sanctions on ordinary Iranians for years. And they've been doing this to create misery and suffering so that people rise up in desperation. And the excuse has been the Iranian peaceful nuclear program. And the United States and the Europeans have constantly been saying that there's an imminent threat because of Iran's nuclear program. But for the last few months, the negotiations have stopped and no one in the West is screaming or yelling about the dangers of the Iranian nuclear program. What does that tell you? It means that their priorities have shifted. There really wasn't a threat. They were trying to focus on Iran, put pressure on Iran, but now they have Ukraine, they have China. So their focus is elsewhere. So they were lying all along. But in any case, the peaceful nuclear program in Iran was an excuse to put pressure on Iran because the United States dislikes the Islamic Republic of Iran because it's independent. Now, in the case of this young woman who died, the important thing is that when the news came out that she passed, it was Western Persian language media based in London and in the United States that spread the news that she was battered and tortured to death. And even I thought that there must have been some sort of police brutality involved that she died because they were, you know, screaming and yelling about it. day and night. Then the footage comes out and it shows her leaving a police van. She's not handcuffed. She shows no sign of pain. She goes into a hall, sits there, after a while talks to someone, and then suddenly collapses. There's no sign of any injury. She's not holding her head or anything like that. Then there's the autopsy, and 19 very senior physicians check all her documents. They check the body and they say that she was never physically harmed.
You know, it's really interesting because the parallels between what you just described as the timeline of events in Iran almost mimic the events and timelines of the George Floyd situation, which happened here in the USA. What was the Iranian people actually told about the racial protest in the United States, and by what main media outlet?
The news in Iran was largely, I think, influenced by, ironically, by CNN and probably the New York Times more than anyone else. And this is one of the unfortunate things in general that the Global South has to really deal with. And that is that a lot of our information, not only about the West, but about other parts of the Global South, come from mainstream Western sources. And of course, therefore, our understanding of, let's say, Brazil, my understanding in Tehran of Brazil, when it's influenced by Western narratives, then it's based upon an understanding that the Western elites want to be believed, whether it's objective or not. So whether it's US internal politics, I think disproportionately, American media, mainstream American media, is influential in Iran. And even when it's not the United States, when it's other parts of the Global South, Western media outlets have an influence that is disproportionate.
You know, I have learned that wherever there is a fire, a small spark or smoke has to exist in the beginning. Therefore, what do you think is the average Iranian woman's view of the public morality laws?
That's a very difficult question to answer because Iran has a population of roughly 85 million. And without a doubt, there are 40 some million different points of view among Iranian women, and another 40 some million views among Iranian men. According to polls that are regularly carried out in Iran by Western institutions and Iranian institutions, overwhelmingly, Iranian women believe in the hijab because they're Muslim. A smaller majority believe that there must be some sort of dress code for public. But how to enforce it and how far it should go is something that is debated. And then there is a minority, and I don't recall how large that minority is, that believes that there shouldn't be any real strict enforcement of a dress code. But again, that is subjective, what is meant by it. But the point that is important is that in Iran, the views towards women and the notion of commodification and objectification here are different than in the United States. And the belief is not that having a more conservative dress code in Iran is to control women, but that it is to prevent them from being objectified and commodified. Now, someone may severely disagree with that perspective, but the point is that the fact is that women in Iran are taxi drivers, they're bus drivers, they're pilots, they're helicopter pilots, they're university professors, they're MPs in parliament. One of my colleagues at the Sister University of Tehran, the University of Tehran Medical Sciences, for medical sciences, she was the Minister of Health for 4 years, if I'm not mistaken. The Ministry of Health is the second largest government ministry in the country, and probably the most complex because it has medical education, university professors, students, it has healthcare, it has the hospital network across the country under its authority. So it's a very complex and complicated ministry. It was a woman. So the idea that somehow in Iran, women are like in Saudi Arabia or like in the Taliban or somewhere else like that is complete nonsense. Is Iran some utopia for women? No. There are no utopias for women. There are no utopias for men. But Iran is not the abnormal, horrific society that the Americans, the American government and American elites or European elites would like ordinary people to think.
So how fair is it to compare the past history of Iran all to the present?
Under the Shah, there was virtually no freedom. And it was the Shah who was in control and his family. And he had very negative views towards women. He has a very famous interview where he's actually sitting beside his third wife and dismissing women, I think with a famous American interviewer, a woman interviewer, I don't remember her name, I think from one of the three major news channels back then, either CBS, NBC, or ABC. It's easy to look it up. And back then, the majority of Iranian women actually didn't even go to school. After the revolution, we had universal education, both for women and men. Right now, the majority of university students in Iran are women. And I work in two different departments. The last two people hired in the American Studies department that I work at are women. I think the last person we hired in the English department, which I also work at, is a man. So, but in any case, we have women professors. We have, as I said, the dean of my faculty is a woman. And the status of women in Iranian society is far higher than what it was during the Shah by any measure. But women they dress more conservatively. Some of them probably definitely don't want to dress in such a way in the public sphere. And many accept it. But the regulations are not strictly enforced at all. You see women in the north of Tehran for a very long time now, especially in the north of Tehran, who don't wear a headscarf, but they still wear long trousers, and they're usually more covered than in European societies. But it is not at all what the image is not at all like what you would think of if you were reading the New York Times or the Washington Post or watching CNN, something like that.
Fascinating conversation. You know what? Thank you so much, Dr. Morandi, for joining us all the way from Tehran. Now, after the break, we're going to give you another view of the Iranian protest and what the end result could be. Stay tuned for more.
In convincing much of the rest of the world on the particular point around Ukraine and Russia's actions in Ukraine. I think one of the problems for the West is the rest of the world looks at this and says, why are you applying one standard in this conflict and you're ignoring those standards in other places? And I think Palestine is very high up there on the list of examples of where you do not apply the same standards.
We are discussing the recent Iranian protest. Joining us now for more on this topic is E. Michael Jones. He is a widely published author and communicator on social, political, and religious topics. Welcome, Dr. Jones. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about the protests that are happening at this present moment. Why are they happening?
Okay. First of all, you've got a situation that has been festering for a long time, which is the crisis over the hijab. In 2009, the CIA got involved in Iran and tried to overthrow the government by using women as their main proxy warriors. That situation hasn't changed. The situation didn't get resolved then. The revolution got squelched. It got put down. But the resentment, the internal resentments are still there, and they go back all the way to the end, the death of the Ayatollah Khomeini in 1989. This is 10 years after the revolution. The revolution effectively ended at that point. With his death, but the new Supreme Leader decided to continue it, which was bad enough, but then he made a really bad decision by introducing birth control into the population of Iran. He did this because the birth rate at that point after the revolution was 7 to 8 children. He felt that they couldn't sustain that population, so he introduced birth control and brought about the biggest drop in fertility history in birth control history.
Wow.
This led to basically a demographic collapse, and it also led to the disruption that we're seeing right now. The Supreme Leader apologized for this in 2010, said it was the biggest mistake he had ever made, and he begged Allah for forgiveness. But at this point, the genie was out of the bottle, and he had created basically the revolutionary situation that we have right now.
Well, it's interesting that you give the history that this is, you know, obviously President Biden under the West was also Vice President Barack Obama. They tried this during that administration. Now they're trying it again. I do have to wonder, though, there was always this idea that the West that got along with the Iranian government, with the Iranian nuclear deal that came out of the Obama administration. Obviously, President Trump's administration tore that to pieces, said it was out the window. It makes you wonder, does the Biden administration actually like this regime that's in office right now? And if they don't, who do they think would replace it if they are successful in overthrowing?
The playbook began in Iran in 1953. The playbook meaning the CIA's plan for overthrowing governments throughout the world. It came to be known as color revolutions. That's what it was in 2009. But in 1953, the United States overthrew the Mossadegh administration and put the Shah into place. So the Shah reigned for about 29 years. He brought about a policy of westernization that created repugnance among the Islamic population. And then the Ayatollah came in and replaced it with an Islamic Republic. So the problem here is that Iran is a constant pendulum swing between westernization, as in when they bring in the Shah, to Islamic reaction, which is when the Ayatollah shows up. So given that history, obviously, the next example is going to be bad. The pendulum will swing back to westernization, and this is what the CIA is counting on. And they think it's going to work.
Well, it's interesting because also on top of this is the environment of Iran being one of the most sanctioned countries in the world. They've been doing this to kind of turn up the pressure on the people, on the government. Do you feel these sanctions affect the leadership or the common people more at this stage after so many years of being in existence?
They always affect the common people more than the leadership. But the untold story about sanctions is that they are another word for tariffs. And tariffs, as the United States found out after they separated from England, can be used to project manufacturing. So sanctions for the Iranian people were in many ways a blessing in disguise because it promoted the rise of industrialization of Iran rather than simply living from oil revenues.
Well, it's interesting because now you bring it to where we are in the present. Once again, this is straight out of the playbook from 2009, using women's rights. And I say using, which there still might be a justification for it, to kind of garner this unrest. So what are the main goals of this current protest? What are they hoping to accomplish?
This protest went from simply being a protest against the hijab. In other words, let's make their wearing the hijab voluntary. That's how it started out. And then it escalated into basically an attempt to overthrow the government. That's what it is now. They are saying that the Islamic Republic has to go. We can no longer have an Islamic Republic. That is, I think, part of the contribution that the CIA is making here behind the scenes. Once the protests get big, they reach a certain point, the CIA and these people, they're going to go for the whole thing. They're going to overthrow the government. That has called forth the draconian reaction on the part of the government. They correctly perceive it as an attempt to overthrow the government. And now they're just coming, attacking the people, gunning the people down in the streets in a way that is going to be counterproductive.
What I find to be interesting is the hijab is a part of the religious aspect of their faith, of the Muslim faith. Some go with it, some don't. It's not necessarily a government mandate. This isn't a government that just says you have to wear it and you don't. So they're taking a religious issue and using it to try to cause change within the government. Can that actually happen, though, with how the current government is and the leadership in control? Are they going to give any on this issue?
They cannot. They cannot, because it's been weaponized into an attack on the government. So the government is backed into a corner now. They cannot back down on the hijab issue. Because it's an existential issue right now. It's not just clothing. It's an existential issue about the future of the Islamic Republic. So my feeling is that at a moment of crisis like this, the only solution is for the for the supreme leader to abdicate. It's got to be something that radical. I think that they should bring President Ahmadinejad back into power. He's a strong leader. He's a Persian nationalist. He resonates with the entire spectrum, Persian to Islamic. And he should come in and say, okay, the revolution is over. It should have ended in 89. It's over now. We're going to have a new constitution. We're going to have a new republic. But we are going to save the Persian people from this CIA attack. That is absolutely non-negotiable. We will not allow the CIA to take over our government and destroy our culture, which is what their intent is. We are going to take control of our own destiny, and we're going to do it step by step away into a new republic, a new era, which will not be an Islamic republic.
It's interesting you keep mentioning, obviously, this is from the outside, the CIA. What I feel sorry for is, do you think the women that are in the streets, and we are seeing, obviously, some clashes that are happening, some of them not ending so well, that if they're grassroots, do you think that these women realize that they potentially could be just basically being tools for a bigger picture that has nothing to do with women's rights or the place of women in Iranian society?
Yes. Look, if you're talking about the women who are taking off the hijab, that's only one segment of the population. There's a large segment of the population who are still wearing the hijab. They're protesting. That doesn't make the news over here. Okay, they're protesting. And I think from my conversations with the Iranians I know, they want to preserve the independence of Iran. They don't want, they're unhappy with both sides. They understand that they're being faced with a choice of either anarchy or tyranny, and they're both bad choices. I had a friend who just told me, he says there's a saying in Farsi now, I hope it's not too crude, I have to tell it what it is, but he says, I've got a saw up my ass and it hurts going in and it hurts coming out. That's the dilemma that these people are faced with right now. They're constantly being confronted by two equally repugnant alternatives, and they're having difficulty finding the middle ground that would allow the unification of the country.
Well, it's very interesting on that side of it. And ultimately, this isn't going to be anything that ends anytime soon. You know what? I just have to, one last question before we go. And my producer was wonderful. She was kind of commenting on your interview as you were giving it. Do you think that in the end, the turbans right now have been the new way for the men to be able to actually act out, for the men to kind of get involved in this? And you've got kids doing it, but they're, like I said, it's all ages, teenagers, kids, all of them. Do you think that's going to have an effect of this idea of now knocking off people's turbans, the religious sector, as they're walking down the street just out in public?
That's an expansion. That's an escalation of the revolutionary movement. It shows that the contempt that they have for the leadership. It shows also that there's contempt for the religious authority. The religious authority, the religious leaders have overplayed their hand. Okay, they've gotten too involved in the political process. The classic example was when they prohibited Ahmadinejad from running for president. They never should have done that. He is a man of the people. He might have solved this problem before it got started. So that turban, again, it's exactly, you're right. It's exactly the same thing as taking off the hijab, but it's a much more aggressive gesture, obviously, because you're knocking it off of someone else's head. And it's only going to harden the Islamic side. The mullahs are going to become now even more determined to resist, when what should happen is that both sides should now take a deep breath and come together, and let's have a conversation about the future of Iran, where everybody can take part.
Thank you so much for joining us, giving us your insight, author and commentator, Dr. E. Michael Jones.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, times have changed for various demographics in many societies, and those changes don't often come, sadly, without chaos and disheveled. However, you are naive if you don't think the geopolitics of the West are not playing a role, as the timing of these protests happening as new ally lines are being drawn by the West is not just a coincidence. Now, different religions and cultures have their own ideologies, and it is best when they are addressed within their own circles, as observations from the outside can often be deceiving. Now, while on the surface there are calls for peace, this would only be accomplished if either the religious regulations were made subjective or there was a regime change. Both would have long-term effects to a very established body, and what happens next would be unpredictable, as major changes either to the government or the religion would be guaranteed to follow. You know, while protesters against the regime call for the world to show how much it loves women and values freedom, the world has shown time and time again their actions don't always match the conviction of their words. And when it becomes inconvenient, or if the conflict no longer presents opportunities, and at that time, it's usually those on the ground who are left all alone. I'm Skynell Hughes, and thank you for watching this edition of 360 View. Until next time.